James, what are your thoughts about what's going on today? Are we going to default on our debt?
Well, the short answer is no. First of all, thank you for having me on once again, Dr. Stan. And my first thing that I'll say today is, physician, heal thyself. It sounds like you are coming down with something, a terrible bug, so I hope that you're okay.
Well, I am coming down with a terrible bug, but it's not communicable over the radio, so we'll be perfectly safe. Come right ahead.
I hope so. Well, yes, I think we are not going to face a default scenario at this point. Literally, all it takes to fix this phony created crisis is a vote in the Senate. So I don't think this is something that they're going to really scuttle the country over. And it's important to keep in mind that this really is just political theater at this point. All it is a Republican-Democrat squabble. And it's important to keep in mind that the fundamental squabble that's happening here is not about whether or not the government should spend more money. It's only about what the government should spend more money on. The Republicans and the Democrats are two sides of the same coin, and they both want to spend more money in the end. It's just that they want to spend that money on different things. So ultimately, I don't believe that this is going to end up in a default. But it is important to keep in mind that the October 17th cutoff date for the debt ceiling limit is only the date at which the government will no longer be able to issue more debt, but they will still be able to meet some of their obligations until it's estimated somewhere between October 23rd and 30th would be the actual date at which they would stop being able to pay off their obligations, and that would be the date of the actual default if that were to come. And once again, I just cannot believe that they will actually allow that to occur when really all it takes to solve this at this point is a vote.
And, of course, I keep getting all these calls all the time asking me to come on radio programs to talk about the coming martial law that's going to be imposed when we default on our debt. And I just go on, I say, I mean, we haven't talked about this personally, but I agree with you totally. It's all political theater. Until people understand we're being constantly manipulated, a great deal of sending the money that we're supposedly in debt for, we owe to ourselves. So we owe to the Federal Reserve, we owe to the Social Security Fund, and the Medicare Trust Fund. I mean, very little do we actually owe to foreign countries or foreign individuals. And the average individual has no idea really this is all a mirage. Would that be a fair analysis?
It really is. And you raise some important points about who the creditors of the United States really are. And I think we should talk more about that.
All right, fine. We'll get to that in just a moment. Well, I guess it's James Corbett. Ladies and gentlemen, you need to be able to think effectively. You need to realize the media is controlled. You're not getting the truth through regular channels. A lot of good people out there panicking, oh, martial law, we're going to lose our country tomorrow. No, we're going to lose our country. Maybe we already lost it.
While the storm clouds gather.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, our guest today, James Corbett. And my voice sounds a little husky. It's because it's a little husky, and I have that bug that's going around. But fortunately, taking immune support, which is a mushroom compound, and allobiotic, which is oil of oregano and oil of elderberry and garlic, and vitamin D3, I'm able to continue going. And because I think these are times when you need to know what's really going on in the world, and you're not going to get it through regular channels. Alternative media, and even many alternative media assembly channels, are not giving you the truth. Well, I guess it's James Corbett, lives over in Japan. And James, you go ahead and pick up the story about what the real issues are and certainly what is going to happen. Because as James points out, it's not that certainly the Republicans want to spend less and the Democrats want to spend more. They all want to spend more. They're all controlled by the same people. Only, of course, the Republicans want to spend it on different sources than the Democrats do. But they're not going to come back on spending. Go right ahead.
Well, that's exactly the point. And people should keep in mind, whenever these types of debt negotiations or talk about the U.S. National debt come about, it's never about actually paying down the debt. It's always about perhaps we should cut back on the amount of the amount of the increase of the debt. So basically cut back on the acceleration of the debt. And even when that talk crops up, it's generally not even something they put into practice. So again, it really is a lot of smoke and mirrors. But just on that note of that, what you were talking about before, about the creditors of the United States, who does the United States actually owe this money to? Well, you're right. In fact, the largest holder of U.S. debt is not a foreign country. It is not China. It is not Japan. It is, in fact, the Federal Reserve that for the last 3 years now has been the largest holder of U.S. debt because of the massive amounts of treasuries that it's buying on a regular basis as a part of its quantitative easing campaigns that it's been doing. So in fact, the most of the debt is actually owed to the Federal Reserve at this point, which is a ridiculous situation and one that just goes to show that this really is political theater, because at any rate, they want you to believe that the Federal Reserve is really kind of a branch or an adjunct of the U.S. government itself. Of course, we know it's actually a privately owned central bank that is actually owned by the banksters themselves. But regardless, it shows that the majority of the largest stakeholder, at any rate, in this U.S. government debt is not a foreign country. And the default to a stakeholder like that would be quite different than a default to China or Japan or one of these foreign holders of U.S. government bonds.
Hang on, we'll be back in just a moment with James Corbett. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and certainly as James was simply pointing out, that the largest holder of American debt is not China, it's not Japan, it is the Federal Reserve System. Now, basically what most people don't understand is the Federal Reserve has nothing to do with the federal government. It's a privately owned central bank owned by a subversive group that controls our banking system that has certainly a far different agenda than the average individual believes and understands. And these people, if you go back and read what Professor Quigley wrote about them in his wonderful 1966 book, Tragedy and Hope, he tells about how these people really plot secretly behind the scenes how they are going to control the world. And they really are. But basically, they are the largest holder of American debt today. And basically, of course, what we ought to do is simply just say, we're going to dissolve the Federal Reserve, we're going to dissolve the debt because we owe it to ourselves, and that'll be the end of it. But of course, that is not going to happen, ladies and gentlemen. In fact, we're not going to do what is logical. Of course, then we owe a couple of $1 trillion to the Social Security Fund, suddenly, because that money's already been spent. But all of this is smoke and mirrors. Most of the debt, the majority of the debt, is not owed to foreign countries at all. We owe it in one way or another to ourselves, and about over $5.5 trillion owed to places like China and Japan. But this is not, certainly the interest on that would be maybe $150 billion. We're taking in $2.5 trillion a year in taxes. We could pay that off tomorrow. But we're not going to do that. They don't want a solution. They want to continue, of course, entertaining the American people and frightening them to death. Go right ahead.
Well, that's a good way of putting it. It really is entertainment at a certain level, as people basically start to invest their identities with their favorite political party, and they start to make it almost a type of team sport. And it really does have all of the reality of a team sport and all of the actual depth of feeling. It's something that people get excited about and they cheer on their team, and then they go home at the end of the day and it doesn't really affect their lives. And I think once people start really realizing that, I think they'll be able to put this into some perspective. But it does actually bring up an extremely important point, which is that the players in this political team sport really do want that type of reaction from the crowd, that that people get concerned and people start to panic. It creates a crisis. They are always looking for that crisis opportunity in order to basically move the political football further down the field. And this is not something that we have to speculate about so much. In fact, it was pointed out that the White House was actually trying to prompt people to be very concerned about what is going to happen in the midst of this shutdown/debt ceiling crisis. because they want to use that sense of concern in order to light the political fire under the feet of these senators to get a deal done. And this was outlined, for example, recently on Bloomberg TV, as pointed out by ZeroHedge.com. They were talking about this and how the White House has been openly saying that they in fact want a negative market reaction from all of this in order for there to be that impetus for a deal to be reached. And this goes to the underlying point of the entire thing, which is that the sense of crisis itself is usually what propels things further further forward in the political sense. And we see this in a number of different fields and in different ways, one of which is came from a very just a fascinating Reuters article that came out this past weekend that was under the headline, "As Crisis Fades, G20 Tries to Get Its Mojo Back." And basically, this article is talking about how the G20 became so important in the wake of the Lehman Brothers collapse and the economic collapse of 2008, that now that the sense of crisis is starting to fade, the G20 and its sense of purpose is also starting to fade, which I think goes exactly in line with what yourself and myself have been talking about week after week here on the program, Dr. Stan, which is that they want this sense of crisis in order to bring about their agenda, in order to further that agenda towards global government. And I think that that's ultimately also something that Carol Quigley was gesturing towards in Tragedy and Hope, that these banksters are going to use crises in order to bring about the further consolidation of their control over the global economic system. And this example of the debt default is just one example of how that's accomplished. And unfortunately, it works very well, as people too often, I think, buy into all of this talk of martial law and clampdown too quickly without realizing that it actually serves the government's agenda to get people panicked about this.
And I think that's so vitally important, ladies and gentlemen. Understand you're being manipulated. Understand, and when I get invited onto other people's radio programs to come forward, you know, and talk about the coming martial law, and I simply just say, look, I mean, I'll come on and talk about it, but I will tell you the truth, and that is, you're being manipulated. It's political theater. We're not going to go into martial law over this. I mean, basically, in fact, I read an article this morning. The government's about to sell Mount Rushmore. They're going to sell Mount Rushmore for a massive housing development, because by doing that, they'll be able to pay off part of the federal debt. Is there anybody in the listening audience who honestly believes, if you stop and think about it, we're going to sell off Mount Rushmore for housing development? But it doesn't really matter whether it's true or not. Basically, if you say it often enough, people will believe. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Now, this is not to say there aren't serious economic problems, but there are serious moral problems in our society, and that basically, sooner or later, this whole house of cards isn't going to come down, but it's not going to come down right at the present time. Go right ahead, James.
Well, that's an important point right there. Of course, this is not to say that there aren't deep structural problems and issues with the U.S. economy, the way it's been basically shoehorned into the current system. There certainly are, but the point isn't that the political theater of what's happening in Washington and the Democrats and Republicans arguing over spending this way or spending that way. The point is the actual monetary base itself and the debasement of the currency through the printing of money via the Federal Reserve that's pumping the trillions of dollars a year into the economy as a way of basically propping it up and keeping the markets going, which of course has been the real key all along, as we continue to see the Dow Jones and the markets basically spiking even as all of this crisis talk is happening, which goes to show how much the markets are really betting on any of this affecting their bread and butter, which is to say not at all. So I think that ultimately, once again, the real problems come back to the way that the Federal Reserve is completely and utterly dominating the American economy and directing the way in which it will go. And perhaps the more important thing in the long term of what's coming out right now is the appointment of Janet Yellen as the next chair of the Federal Reserve to replace Ben Bernanke when he steps down in January of next year, because apparently everyone is expecting, at any rate, Janet Yellen to be basically Ben Bernanke on steroids, and that not only will quantitative easing not end or not taper in any time in the near foreseeable future, but in fact it may even increase under Yellen, who's even more interested in using the Federal Reserve and its money press to basically create even more money to flood the markets with, and to make sure that this rocket ride to the stars that the Dow Jones and the S&P have been on recently doesn't come to an end anytime soon.
But of course, the thing that really, of course, impresses me as I go through the stores, I notice there aren't quite as many people there. I talk to my people in the banking industry. They tell me people are not investing, or people are not taking out loans, or they can't qualify for loans. So many people suddenly who have property are underwater. In other words, they own more on it than the true value, the market value of the item that they have, property or apartment homes or whatever it is. But basically, I mean, certainly we keep talking about inflation, and yet on some part, on one hand, we see the price of food and energy going up. On the other hand, we see certainly a contraction. That's because the stock market keeps going up, and I believe that's totally manipulated. But as far as certainly people holding on to money, apparently it's not only in the United States, but all throughout the world, people are not simply spending money as they have in the past. What's your impression of that?
Well, I think that assessment is exactly right, that retail sentiment and consumer sentiment continues to be pretty abysmal in the U.S. economy right now. And I think most people in the listening audience will be able to see that in their daily lives. And the fact that this is not all ending up in some big spending boom, that everyone's going out and buying everything up. Unfortunately, of course, all of this really is just centered on Wall Street and the big financial players. And it's something that's happening in those rarefied circles that the average American never really directly experiences. So the talking heads on the financial TV can talk all they want about whatever's happening in the markets and with overall spending and GDP and all of these figures that don't have any impact on people's day-to-day lives. But I think people can see the discrepancy between that and what's actually happening out there on the street. And it's important to realize that again, this money that the Federal Reserve is printing up out of nothing in order to buy these treasuries and mortgage-backed securities and the like aren't going into the economy. They're not flooding onto Main Street. They're being basically stored on the balance sheet of the Federal Reserve, which now is, I believe, over $3 trillion, just sitting there parked in the Federal Reserve's own accounts. So this money is not actually making its way into the economy, which to a certain extent is a good thing, because it means that the hyperinflationary tide that we would otherwise expect from all of this money printing is not hitting. In fact, inflation is not nowhere near what we would expect it to be if this were really actually making its way onto Main Street. And I guess that's a good thing for now, but unfortunately, all it means is in the future, if credit starts to rise, there might start to be that problem as the money makes its way into the economy and inflation starts to kick off.
And of course, there's nothing more destructive for the financial wealth of the American people than inflation. It's not that we certainly it's coming. I don't know when it's coming, but they're holding it back. They're keeping this money from getting into the economy. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. We're going to go to John calling Spokane here in just a moment. If you have a question or comment, you are living in one of the most important financial times of your life, and you've got to begin preparing yourself and defending yourself. Our number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 464-8295. John, do you have a question for our guest?
Yes. Actually, I was wanting to put in a comment first and then a question. I've been thinking that the best way to flood society with excess dollars would be for the value of gold and silver to be boosted to $1,000 a gram. I think if gold were put at $1,000 per gram and silver was put at $500 per gram, people would be rushing to sell off gold and silver to get all that extra cash.
Well, anyway, what was your question?
I was wondering if either you or James Corbett was hearing anything about the gemstone market, because I heard from a friend of a friend, that a lot of billionaires are grabbing up gemstones.
Gems surname. John calling from Vocan said he's heard that, that a lot of wealthy people are buying up gemstones. Have you heard that? Is there any truth to that, or is that simply somebody who wants to sell gemstones?
I certainly haven't heard anything about that. I haven't really been following the gemstone market in general, though, so I couldn't comment on that either way, but I certainly haven't heard anything to that effect.
John, if I were you, I wouldn't be going into gemstones right now. Anything else?
Oh, well, I just thought I'd ask that. And
it's a pretty
good program.
Okay. Thank you so much, and let's go to... we have Tony calling from West Virginia. Hi, Tony. Do you have a question or comment for us?
I have a question, and I have another question too as well. But I understand from what you're saying that the interest on the Chinese and the Japanese debt is $150 billion thereabouts. So the interest that will be charged on the Federal Reserve is funding to the United States government would be at the same basis. I mean, so we could say that the interest the Federal Reserve is collecting is triple what China and Japan is due as far as the interest is going to come up to. So you say will be in October, not they won't be able to reach that limit.
Well, basically, what you're saying is the interest on our debt to China and Japan is about $150 billion, and it's about similar to the interest that we owe the Federal Reserve and the Social Security. Is that it, Tony?
Yeah, well, is that interest computed at the same rate that China and Japan are
All right, James, is the interest that certainly that we pay to China and Japan computed at the same rate of the interest that we pay to the Federal Reserve and the Social Security Administration?
Yes, it is. At the end of the day, all of this is just U.S. treasuries, and those treasuries are paid out at the same interest rate no matter who's holding them. So the Federal Reserve holds some, the Japanese hold some, the Chinese hold some, and they're all calculated the same. So the interest rate is going to be the same on all of those treasuries.
Does that answer your question, Tony?
I have one more question, you know. And when I think about corporate charters that are set up on the...
Tony, hold that thought. Hold the thought.
Okay.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, I guess James Corbett. And we have Tony calling from West Virginia, and he has a question. What is that question, Tony?
Yeah, it has to do with international charters. When charters are set up on the international framework, and they're mainly set up first in the United States, like you might say Walmart or General Motors or any of these other corporations, I understand that they have to build the structure for the factories and all that, the country where they're at. And they have to set up the payment plan and the insurance plans for the employees that they employ. And so obviously a lot of money is going into the setting up the structure and also coming up with the plan for the social order that goes on over there, what they have to actually be paying. But when it comes to overall profits, is there something that is held over for the United States in the sense that, that they receive some kind of a... benefits in tax, United States taxes that return to this country because the recent charter was set up in the United States?
James, you understand the question.
I believe that I do, and if the question are there taxes that are due on sales that come back into the country from manufacturing and others that have things that have been produced overseas, then the answer would be yes. But this is, of course, why a lot of international multinational corporations do keep a lot of their money that they earn overseas. They keep it overseas in various ways, various accounts, because of course, if that money is repatriated, then it will come with some tax burden. And that's why we see, for example, corporations like Apple, which has billions of dollars in theoretical revenues that are sitting there, but that have not been repatriated back into the United States, specifically to avoid having to pay taxes on them.
And I think that, Tony, what you have to understand is that basically we're doing everything we can to discourage investment in the United States. We encourage corporations to move overseas because, of course, if they go over there, they don't have to pay any corporate taxes in America. You stay here in America, we're going to tax it 35%, Sydney. If you go overseas, you don't have to pay any American taxes. If you bring the money back and you stimulate our economy, why, of course, Sydney, then, of course, we're going to tax you on it. We're going to, Sydney, just squeeze you. If you stay overseas and keep your money over there, everything's fine. People don't understand the real agenda is to build up the economies of the rest of the world and to destroy the economy here in the United States. What's going on in Detroit today is a beautiful example of certainly of this policy, and we see it all across America. It is because certainly our leaders have an entirely different agenda than the average individual understands. These people are dedicated to a one-world government, a one-world monetary system, and they're using our corporate system to establish that and building up the economies in China and India and Malaysia and Africa and South America while they're strangling the economy here. Anything else, Tony, before we let you go?
Well, I think that's interesting that you say that there's overseas tax havens. You know, that's for that avoid me bringing that surplus profit back to the United States. But I appreciate you, James Corbett. Thanks for your answer as well.
Okay, fine. Do you have any comment at all on what I said, James? Because, yeah, the nice thing is you don't have to agree with me. If you disagree with me, go right ahead.
No, I completely agree that the productive capacity of the United States has been absolutely consciously offshored over the past few decades. This has been a process that has been absolutely foreseen by many people, including people like the late James Goldsmith, who back in the 1990s was warning about what NAFTA really represented in these trade deals and the World Trade Organization, and how this was leading towards the destruction of the productive capacity of the Western countries. And he has been proven right in spades over the decades, and the people who were saying that NAFTA and these other trade agreements were going to be a wonderful thing and a way of helping to support American companies was, of course, the exact opposite. And of course, it does support the companies, but only insofar as they're able to move that money and wealth offshore. And companies like Apple are a prime example of that, where supposedly over $100 billion in Apple sales have not been brought back to the United States specifically.
We got another minute. Go right ahead. You're saying, but what is that? $100 billion?
Over $100 billion in overseas income of Apple have not been brought back to the United States specifically to avoid having to pay the taxes, the American taxes on that money. So again, it just goes to show that the point of these multinational corporations and the way that they're structured is to keep that money away from the United States, and that is a system that has not developed by chance. It has been brought about consciously. And as consciously an attempt, I think, to undermine the productive U.S. economy.
And I think people have to understand that many of these corporations are all controlled by what I call the Brotherhood of Darkness, if you don't know what it is. How they interlock through the Council on Foreign Relations, the Trilateral Commission. You need to get my book, and you need to get, of course, the membership list, the Council on Foreign Relations, and Professor Quigley's book. You need to get the books and understand what's really going on, because your future depends on it. Well, this is Dr. Stan. We've got Johnny calling in from Missouri. Hi, Johnny. Do you have a question or comment for our guest?
Well, I've got an observation and a question.
All right, fine.
Thanks for the opportunity. And my observation is we're coming up on the 100th anniversary of the Federal Reserve and the fact that they didn't expect it to make it much more than 20 years, and they've gone five times past that. I was wondering if maybe James might have an observation on if this could just be time for them to make the next evolutionary step for the corporate body.
All right, basically, because James, Johnny is asking, certainly, is it time for the Federal Reserve certainly to be dissolved? But the Federal Reserve, the people who control it, have no intention, in my opinion, of giving up their power, because if you control the largest central bank in the world, you control the economy of the world, and these people's loyalty is not to America, but to this globalist dream. How would you respond to Johnny calling from Missouri, James?
Well, I think it's important for people to who don't realize it, and thankfully more and more people do realize it, but the history of the United States has, to a large extent, really been the history of the fight against the formation of a central bank. And this has happened a couple of times in the U.S. history before, the First Bank of the United States, the Second Bank of the United States, but both of those banks were put down relatively quickly. The Federal Reserve, as the caller points out, has now been around for one century, which is an incredible length of time to be in charge of the U.S. economy. And I do have that fear that I believe the caller is pointing out, that if and when they do move to abolish the Fed or end the Fed, quote unquote, they will in fact just be replacing it with an even more Orwellian type system where it will actually feed into a global central bank. I could see that happening at some point in the future, but I don't see that happening anytime in the near future at any rate, unless there's some sort of cataclysmic economic event in the meantime.
Johnny, I wish it were going to be that the Federal Reserve would dissolve, but believe me, these people control the media, they control our politicians, they control the banking system, they control the wealth of our nation. Six major banks which control the Federal Reserve control over 50% of all of the financial assets of America, and they're not about to give it up. Anything else you want to say, Johnny? Have a question.
There was a piece of information I come across.
Johnny, hold that thought. Hold the thought there for just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, I guess, this is James Corbett. He's a financial analyst living in Japan. He comes from Canada. Suddenly, you could go over the internet, you'll find out all sorts of articles written by James, and he's certainly quoted frequently by very knowledgeable people, and I feel it's a privilege to have him with us on a regular basis here. We have Johnny calling from Missouri. If you're out there in the listening audience, you have a question or comment, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295 here in the Central Coast of California. But before we get back to Johnny, James, I want you to tell our listeners how they can get in touch with you and get the International Forecaster. You write for that on a weekly basis. And then how they can get your material, which, of course, is your publication because you have your own independent newsletter. Go right ahead.
Absolutely. Well, the International Forecaster is a bi-weekly newsletter that comes out on Wednesdays and Saturdays. It's a 30 to 40 pages. It's an e-newsletter, and it contains information on social and political and geopolitical and economic and financial matters. So I think it is a great resource for people, and I happen to write the lead editorial for both of those bi-weekly editions of the newsletter. If people are interested in seeing some of my editorials or some of the articles that appear in there, you can find it at the internationalforecaster.com. That's the internationalforecaster.com, where you can, of course, also subscribe to the newsletter, and you can also get a free introductory copy if it's your first time subscribing. People who want more information via snail mail, you can write in P.O. Box 7752, Winter Haven, Florida 33883. That's P.O. Box 7752, Winter Haven, Florida 33883. If people are interested in my own work, I'm available at CorbettReport.com. That's CorbettReport.com. And I have thousands of hours of media there, audio and video, available for free download for people. If you do enjoy that, if you are a regular listener to my own work, then you can support me by subscribing to my own newsletter. And details of that are, again, available at CorbettReport.com.
All right. Well, we have Johnny calling from Missouri. Johnny, did you have a question for our guest?
Yeah, when I first started my self-education back in the late 70s, early 80s, one of the first pieces of information I come across was shortly after we went on the petrodollar, that the United States Incorporated sold all of our national parks to either the IMF or the United Nations. And I don't understand how they're going to resell those parks again.
Do you have any comment at all on that, James?
I'm sorry, I don't think I quite caught that.
He said that John, he was saying that when he first began studying this, he had heard that we'd sold all of our parks to the United Nations, or we'd sold many of our national parks to the United Nations. I've heard this. I don't know whether it's true or not, although I think that sometimes you do see this whole idea that the notations on our national parks, that somehow or other they're tied into the United Nations, but basically, do you have any thoughts at all about that?
I've certainly seen that as well, and I've seen some of the notations that you're talking about, that certain parks are now administered by the United Nations, whatever that means. But I think that ultimately, at this point, they're still being run and administered on a daily basis by the U.S. federal government. So I don't know about this actually having been transferred indeed, but I think that that at least the idea is that the United Nations is the body that ultimately is, I think, in the implementation of the New World Order and the post-Agenda 21 society, the body that's going to be running all of these types of green spaces and telling people where they can and can't go. But I think the implementation of that is going to be still quite a ways off. I don't think we're quite there yet. So I don't know about the actual ownership of these parks, but I certainly think that on the day-to-day basis, they are being run and operated by the U.S. federal government at this point.
And I think that's a very accurate. Johnny, you have to understand, this is all symbolic. They want to give us the idea, suddenly, that we have to have this world government. I mean, we all have to get along together. If we want world peace and do away with war, why have we got to have this global system? And how are we going to get it? Why do we fight war after war after war? We want to help people have democracy. That's why we impose ruthless dictatorships on them and kill millions of people. We live in a world gone mad. When you understand that, it all makes sense. Okay? God bless. Thanks very much. And let's go to Dave is calling from Illinois. Again, our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-295. Our guest is James Corbett from the Corbett Report from the International Forecaster. Dave, you have a question for our guest.
Question, comment, good evening, gentlemen. like you said, Dr. Stan, before my call, that what you said earlier tonight that you know, that the Federal Reserve is the biggest owner of our debt. And I thought that was true, but that was, you verified it. Well, you know, people hearing that might think, well, all we have to do is expose a lie of the Fed, what it is, and just say, we're not paying you guys, go pound sand. Well, you know, that's just like you also said, they're never going to give up their power, ever. So the lie will never die. The Fed will never go away, just, well, at least not in our lifetime. And so my question, Mr. Corbett, is that being the absolute cold-blooded fact, the Fed's not going to go away. It's just not, okay? So with that being the fact, the game won't change. And so wouldn't you say it's absolutely inevitable that the dollar is going to crash to the point where the American people will be impoverished? We will be a third-world country. Wouldn't you say that's inevitable, given the fact that the Fed will simply never go away? It's not going
to
happen.
All right, fine. How would you respond to Dave calling from Illinois? Says James, it's neat. Dave says, look, the Fed isn't going to go away. The dollar is going to crash. Suddenly, people are going to be impoverished. This is what's going to happen. How would you respond to him?
Well, I completely agree. Under the system, that the way it has been structured and the way that it is currently operating, there is, I think, no way of avoiding that. It's only a question of how long that can be put off. And I think that, unfortunately, I share the caller's idea that the Federal Reserve is ultimately not going to go away. It's not going to be abolished. If anything, it will only ever be replaced by something even worse than what we have now. I don't see them relinquishing that control. So yes, I think that the way that the economy has been structured, there is no way to avoid it, which is why I think that the only real reform that is possible is not reform at all. It's actually people turning away from this system and these Federal Reserve notes and working together to try to use different currencies, alternative currencies and the like, and to get off of this Federal Reserve system by simply refusing to be a part of it. And I know that's a long and complicated and difficult process, but it's one that the people have to take on their responsibility for themselves, because the federal government certainly isn't going to do it for them.
And David, I agree with everything you say from a logical point of view. but we don't live in a logical world. And I would simply just leave you with one thought. Between man's plan in time and God's plan in eternity, there's an infinite quality of difference. Between man's plan in time and God's plan in eternity, there's an infinite quality of difference. And the one thing that we certainly don't take into account is that there really is a God and there really are supernatural forces out there. And what I said every Sunday morning, I return into Erwin Lutzer, the minister at the Moody Bible Church in Chicago. And for the last few weeks, he sounded just like Radio Liberty. He's talking about certainly this invisible world that's out there. The fact that there's a real world and then there's the invisible world, the spiritual world, and that's where this is taking place. It's a fascinating time to live. You're absolutely right from a logical point of view. But we live in a world gone mad. We're entering exciting times. Prepare yourself and your family. And I hope they all have a personal relationship with our Lord. Okay.
One more question, if you don't mind.
Okay, sure.
Ms. Corbett, do you think, I know you can't predict time. No one's got a crystal ball. I don't. But, you know, would you say, is there any possibility that we have as long as 20 or 30 years before things get as bad as we're talking? Do you think is we have, you know, my generation, baby boomers, a lot of people who have an idea in my generation think that, well, you know, they'll either be dead or doddering old men before things get that bad. Do you think we had that much time before things really do go down that far?
I think it is at least theoretically possible that it could be postponed that long. I don't think it's very likely, specifically because of what you mentioned, the demographics of the baby boomer generation and this flood of people who are retiring at this time and starting to draw on their pensions and the like, is part of what's contributing, I think, to the collapse of the system that has been built up in their name. So I think that we are, at demographically speaking, at a point where change is going to start happening a lot quicker now. So could it be put off for a couple of decades? Theoretically, perhaps there's a way to do that, but I don't see that this process taking that long to happen. I would say that it would be safer to say that it would be the changes that we're expecting will be happening within the decade. But again, I don't have the crystal ball, so I guess we'll have to wait and see.
Okay, Dave, thanks. Thanks very much. And let's go to Eric, who's calling from Compton, an old friend. Hi, Eric. How are we doing?
I'm fine, my friend. How are you?
I'm doing fine.
Mr. Corbett, just to accentuate your point of the government trying to panic people, I work for a supermarket. I've been at a supermarket for 44 years now. And last Saturday, our EBT system, Dr. Stan, I don't know if you're aware of this, our EBT system was down from 8 o'clock in the morning until about 6 o'clock at night. And they said it was a nationwide problem. EBT is the food stamp program, Dr. Stan. That means these people could not buy their food. That was last Saturday. It was down from 8 o'clock in the morning until about 6 o'clock in the evening. And I'm firmly convinced that was just to panic people, to scare people, to think it had. They said it was a glitch, but I'm sure they wanted them to make the association about with the government shutting down and all this. What do you think?
Do you have any thoughts on that, James? Certainly Eric is saying that this shutdown of the food stamp program, he thinks it may very well have been done intentionally. Certainly, first of all, to see how people would react, and secondly, to begin to condition them for the fact that some major cataclysmic event may be coming. What are your thoughts on that?
It absolutely wouldn't surprise me in any way if that was actually part of basically preparations, testing the system, seeing how people react in that situation, starting to get people into that panic mode. It wouldn't surprise me in the least if that had been engineered. And of course, what did we see as a result of that glitch? We did see shopping stampedes at places like Walmart, where people were suddenly believing that the end was near, so they were starting to stock up on emergency supplies and the like until the glitch was fixed. So it's an interesting glitch that occurred. No matter how it occurred or why, it certainly did show us a glimpse of what would occur if and when the food stamps actually stop coming.
I agree with everything James said. Anything else, Eric?
No, that was it.
Okay, God bless. Good to hear from you. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. And we've got Tom calling from St. James, Missouri. Hi, Tom. How are we doing?
Great, Dr. Stan. Thanks for taking the call. I really liked what James was saying about the way I took it was pulling out of the Federal Reserve System on your own as much as you can, which is something that we've done around here for as long as I can remember. I mean, it goes back to my grandparents and the great, they were born, they were married in 33, so, you know, they were the Great Depression adult era. If your neighbor needs a fence put up, you go help him put the fence up, and he might pay you in eggs or chickens or cows or whatever he has. He might not necessarily have cash, and that's just the way we live here. We've done that forever. But more of my friends and family were starting to see that don't keep your wealth in Federal Reserve notes or stocks. Get it in something you can hold in your hand, like gold and silver. And I just didn't know if there's anything else that James or you might suggest that we could do to kind of withdraw from their system.
All right, James, how would you respond to Tom calling us from St. James, Missouri?
Well, my hat's off to you for yourself and those in your area choosing to interact in ways that don't involve Federal Reserve notes. I think that really is the key. And any way that people can facilitate that local trade through barter or whatever other means they can do it, whether it's a local alternative currency or what have you, if there's a way to get off of the Federal Reserve notes, that is absolutely important to do so, because, again, they do have the economy in that death grip, and they can do whatever they want with those Federal Reserve notes, because ultimately they come from the Federal Reserve, but they can't control individual people interacting freely like that at the local level. So my hat's off for all of that. In terms of where to actually hold people's wealth and stores of value, of course, I do think that precious metals is a great store of value and has been throughout much of recorded human history for thousands of years. Gold and silver have retained their relative value on the market, and I think they will continue to do so no matter what happens with those phony Federal Reserve notes. I think real estate and other tangible things that again can be held in the hand or can actually be lived on or in are good ways of storing wealth, because ultimately at the end of the day, if the entire system collapses, it's things like gold and silver and real estate that will continue to have value no matter what happens with those phony toilet paper pieces of paper that they expect people to use as dollars.
And I think it's so hard for people to imagine the whole system coming down. We live in the most wonderful utopian world. I mean, basically, we've got almost, 49 million people, 48, 49 million people on food stamps. We've got 100 million people on Medicare and Medicaid. We suddenly have that 56 million or more on the Social Security, another 10 million on Social Security disability. We are providing all these wonderful things for the people, and basically, of course, all sorts of subsidies for housing and education. The only trouble is we can't afford it. The government can't take enough money in. If the government increases taxes, the economy collapses. If the government doesn't increase taxes, why, of course, will we simply continue spending money we don't have? And one of these, sooner or later, the whole house of cards comes down. But it's not going to come down here in the next few days. It's not going to come down because of this phony debt crisis. Ladies and gentlemen, this whole idea that we simply we're going to default on our debt, political theater. I tell them, Tom, anything else you wanted to say before we let you go?
I wanted to thank you both for all that you do, and Dr. Stan wants to know that you're coming through loud and clear on WCR on the shortwave. Thank you.
Okay, great. Thanks very much. And we do hope, if you're out there in the listening audience, you'll tell other people about our programs. I do what I do because we want people to listen. How rewarding it is to know that we have a conservative Talmudic Jews living in Samaria. Listen to our internet programs. We have people, certainly, in Shanghai. Somebody told me that after being on our program, he was contacted from somebody from Shanghai who wanted to publish some material. We're getting the information out with the help of you out there in the audience. Our guest, of course, has been James Corbett. enter the, you can get the COVID report, you can get the international forecaster, but you need to understand what's going on. We're moving into a crisis situation. It's not going to be within the next week or so, but it's coming. It's not a matter of if, but when. Well, Graham, it's interesting. We got more callers, I think, on this program than we have in any previous program. Oh, we've got 3 minutes to wrap up. What is the parting thought you'd like to leave with our listeners out across America, indeed, all across the world?
Well, let's take our parting thought from that last caller and leave things on a somewhat positive note. Again, you're exactly right. The question of crisis is not if, but when. And in fact, we are already living through the beginnings of the crisis that have been created over the course of the past 100 years, at the very least, by the Federal Reserve and the system that they brought about. And again, the answer is not going to come from Washington. It's not going to come from some vote on the House floor by the Senate or the Congress or something that the president signs into law. The answer is going to happen at the local community level, and it's going to involve people trading with each other and bringing it back down to that level. So again, community is such an important part of this equation, because if the ideal is to have government by and for the people, then what better way to do that than to actually have the people interacting with each other rather than simply voting in this game of political football? So I think that people should stop giving all of their time, attention, energy, and worries to the federal government, because in however this debt crisis and all of this plays out, it ultimately only profits and benefits the political system itself, which always wins and always grows and enlarges and engorges itself on this sense of crisis. If we stop giving that to them, then we have taken away one of their levers of control. So again, rather than worrying about what's happening in Washington, I hope people will spend a day getting to know their neighbors and starting to maybe set up a local community currency or a local market that they can transact with each other locally, and stop giving all their power and attention to Washington.
Okay, well said. Thank you very much. We'll look forward to talking to you next week.
Thank you. Looking forward to it, too.
Bye-bye. God bless. And that was James Corbett. Hope you enjoyed the program. We'll be back in a moment to wrap up the program here.